Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the World Cup on Caught Offside.
Ronaldo! Oh, it's come on, God! Ronaldo! Brazil are in front! It's Ronaldo!
And Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
Aimed it for Kurtza! And Germany are the champions of the world. It's Mbappe! Oh, my
God! Now, here are your hosts, Andrew and JJ.
Oh, yes! Caught offside from my parents' basement outside of Philadelphia and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney, what's up, brother?
You tell me what's up. I'm still trying to calibrate how to feel about that game.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, my initial instinct is to feel good about what happened. Obviously, it felt like there were moments where a win was within their grasp, and that would have been so cool. But I think the U.S. proved at least somewhat of a point today that they can play with pretty much any team in the world. That was a really strong performance from them. I think most American fans would leave this game today feeling really proud about what they saw. Ultimately, the equation doesn't really change. It's still a win versus Iran. But I think you leave that game today as an American fan feeling pretty good about this team. While you talk, JJ, see, I'm in my parents' house, like I said, and you know how parents' houses are. There's just things all over that you can't explain. Noises suddenly happen. I don't know what just happened. There's a gigantic, like, industrial-sized dehumidifier behind me that just clicked on. I'm going to go turn it off because it's the loudest thing I've ever heard. You go for one sec.
All right. Andrew, of course, joining us live from some kind of a bunker just outside of Berlin. Look at that little slit in the window, too. Unbelievable kind of backdrop for Andrew to be in. Not professional. Look at me, what I have behind me. It's absolutely perfect. Is this stream brought to us by Peloton?
Sure. Why not? Hey, my dad's Peloton is right
one,
there.
One thing you'll never use is a Peloton, all right?
I actually am intimidated just being in the same room as it. I can't make eye contact with it.
You brought a rowing machine a few years ago, and all it has done is gather dust. It's the saddest rowing machine ever.
And
used
served
it twice.
as an alternate clothes hanger.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to get a few comments before we even get into the game, Andrew. Let's just sample the mood of the nation right now. Mm-hmm. Are the boys using the same hairstylist? The obvious question. No, we're not. Andrew uses Lego by Vidal Sassoon, and I use just a very, very basic wax. Not having a real striker will do in the U.S. men's national team. I am not confident going into the game against Iran, says Nexus Fantissimo. Zimmerman out, which I think is rather harsh.
Well, here, let's take a sec for each of these.
Well, hang on one sec. I have to include Stanley Givner with the comment of the moment so far. Literal prisoner of the moment, Andy. It does look like you are.
I can move freely. I can move freely.
You've been allowed.
Don't worry about me.
My wife says it's okay.
Yeah. So, okay, let's go. I want to go through some of those comments because they are interesting. I would say it's not altogether shocking. It's a little bit sad to come out of a 0-0 draw against England with the initial takeaways being stuff that's really negative. But I get it. I get it. Especially in those two areas. Start with the Zimmerman thing first. I thought for the most part throughout the course of this game, he was actually pretty good. Okay. I mean, obviously defensively, he had the play of the game. Harry Kane got that opportunity in the first, I have my notes here. I could tell you what minute it was. I forget exactly. You all know the play that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. The ball comes down. It was cut back by Saka. It was one of England's only really cohesive and coherent moves of the entire 90 minutes, when early on they found little gaps in behind down the right-hand side in behind Anthony Robinson, our left. Saka cuts it back and Zimmerman throws his body on the grenade.
I mean, it's the defensive play of the game. I think everybody felt the same way as that play was unfolding, as the ball made its way to Harry Kane's foot. We talk all the time, JJ, about the goals that, like, we see the net rippling before the ball has reached the back of it. I think a lot of us felt that way, and Zimmerman intervened. So, like, if we're going to point out all of the bad things that he does, it's completely and wildly unfair to not point out the good things as well. It's the defensive play of the game. It saved a point for the U.S. over the course of this game. Having said that, late in the game, just like against Wales, he made probably the shakiest defensive play of the game. Against Wales, it cost us 3 points. And tonight against England, he was bailed out. It led to a set piece. But, that pass that he made was unnecessary, risky, and it could have nearly led to England coming back the other way with the U.S. players out of position, and it could have led to a goal for England. So, I mean, it seems right now that we're starting – I mean – we're getting a sense of kind of what you're going to get from Walker Zimmerman. There's going to be some highs, which you saw tonight, and there's going to be some lows, which we've seen a little bit more of. So, look, I get some of the negativity, but we got to point out the good as well.
Okay, can I interject on that? I think defensively he's fine. If you ask him to play those kind of between the lines, trying to get us up the field passes, he does struggle. Richard Rolson here, Zimmerman needs to improve his passing. He was rough all match. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. But can I just go global for a second. I thought the US, generally speaking, were tactically spot on in this game. I think we gave England so many headaches. Now, I'll get to England in a moment because there's some criticism coming their way. But I thought, generally speaking, the United States were excellent. The fact that we slipped into that 4-4-2 very early on with Weah and Haji Wright pressing. We cut off the passing lanes. Like, it's a long time since Declan Rice. Maybe it's not that long. Actually, he plays for West Ham and England have been poor in the Nations League. I was going to say it's a long time since Declan Rice has been that ineffective. That's probably not true. But let's say Bellingham. Rice and Bellingham were nullified. And as that first half moved along, we really took over. And it felt to me like there was a goal coming, except we know there's never a goal coming. There just isn't. And that is the real issue for this team. We are, and I hate using it because it's such a strong, loaded term, but we are impotent when it comes to finishing those chances. And it's what's going to cost us, or potentially cost us, against Iran. Now, I think Iran, they're a better side than we thought. Wales are exactly what we saw from the US game for most of it. They're a poor side and a side in decline. So I think Iran will give us chances. I'm already floating ahead to the Iran game because right now we know that this game that's just passed doesn't really matter. It's win or go home against Iran. My point being, the US throughout this game, I thought, looked like the best team. They looked like the front foot side. I think they exposed the innate conservatism of Gareth Southgate's selections. I thought we were very, very good. But as the game dragged on into that second half, it looked less and less likely we'd score. Not because we wouldn't put an attack together. It's because we just can't find the net. 7 corners, Andrew, and not one of them dangerous. Yeah. It's not that. That's the real frustration for me. Out of a game that really, I think in years gone by, we would have been lauding this as England beats, as the US beats England 0-0. That would have been the front page of the New York Post. But not this time. And not against that England.
Yeah. So a couple things off of some of what you just said there. One, I want to touch on the corner kick stuff that you mentioned there. You're right. 7 corner kicks. Nothing came from them. Although I do think that it's important a little bit to differentiate between nothing coming from them and then automatically associating that with Christian Pulisic not playing in good balls. I actually thought some of them were very good. It's just sometimes that's the way it goes.
And Harry Maguire had an excellent game in the air, marshalling anything that did make it through. That's fair.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that that's worth pointing out. And then the other thing you said that's interesting is you said you've kind of, you're already moving on to the Iran game because such is the consequences of this game. It almost feels like JJ, because we really knew that before this game even kicked off, that like this game was always going to be fun. It was always going to be really meaningful. It was never going to be the decider of anything, win or lose or draw. This game almost felt more like a culture, like a more important cultural game than it did an actual World Cup game. Does that make sense? I wonder if anyone else was feeling that.
Yeah, it's like when you watch the PBS NewsHour. That's the Iran game. PBS NewsHour is the Iran game, whereas this game was a culture war. So it's like Tucker Carlson or Hannity tonight. That's what that is. This is just kind of a back and forth. This is more of, you heard some of the chants. You heard the England chants. It was exactly that. The United States, I think they started, chanting, I believe that we will win. And right after that, the English fans responded. We had an in-stadium culture war. They responded with, what the fuck, you know, was that? What the fuck, you know? So that was the level on which this game was played and ultimately the importance of it. It was another chapter in the ongoing culture war between the daft Yanks, as they call us, and them across the pond, as we call them.
So where did you watch this one?
I watched this. Do you know what, Andrew? I defaulted to the safety of my own viewing situation in the apartment. It was too big of a game. Like, and also considering how quickly we had to get on the live stream, the last thing you needed me was like four or five bottles deep running back to the apartment to set up. You know, it would have been a disaster. So I watched it literally just yards away on my television so I could bring the best possible analysis. And I'm already failing, no doubt.
I was upstairs from where I am right now in my parents' living room. So in the first half of this game, because you know how it is with Thanksgiving, there's just like, it's a great time. It's my favorite holiday. There's family everywhere. So the first half of this game was mainly occupied by Jack sitting on my shoulders and Luke, who found a recorder. You know, the musical instrument recorder.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no.
He found one, and most of the first half was occupied by him playing it. Strong's commentary.
Just for people who don't know, the recorder is the tin whistle or any air instrument's most annoying cousin.
Yeah,
it is a shrill. Even when it's played properly, it sounds like shit.
Yeah.
It is
like if I were advertising it, I'd say like, "Are you someone who's annoyed by people whistling? Well, you're gonna hate this."
Yeah. Have you ever wondered what it would feel like to have a drill go through your ear, but without the damage of a drill going through your ear?
Yeah.
Have you bought a recorder yet?
Yeah. And then have a 3-year-old play it who only knows one volume. As like, he's only going to go as hard as he can with that thing. But then they went and did some pottery thing at halftime. So it was kind of me and my dad able to just take it in. And it was fun. I mean, honestly, this was fun. I tweeted before the game, I was as up for this as I think any soccer game I could possibly be up for. Like, this
you were
was
very pumped. You were so pumped that you used a swear word in a text message. That's when you know old
Andy.
Well,
I curse in texts. I just am not an animal on this feed because I understand that our audience consists of people of all ages, unlike you, who have already used the F word in the first 10 minutes of this thing.
Come
but
on,
continue.
People want raw, sexy, uncut JJ, and I'm giving them that.
Well, guess what else they're getting? The explicit rating when this is released as an audio podcast.
You're a disgrace. You are. I'll tell you what, the only person that lacks more bravery and courage than you is Gareth Southgate.
We'll get to him.
Royalty 95. I played recorder from 5th to 10th grade. Hated it, lol. And everyone hated you, too, while you played it.
So I do want to go through some of this game, JJ. I did manage to take some notes today. It was very professional. The first half was really interesting because the game started out England on the front foot, that Kane opportunity that we mentioned that Zimmerman came up big for. You know, that was early on in this game. And it felt like it could be one of those games where the U.S. is just on their heels a lot. You hope to concede as little as possible, but you always in the back of your mind know you're going to concede at least one. But then it changed.
It couldn't have been less the case.
yeah, like everything around, I'd say maybe the 20th minute or so, started to change a little bit. 17th minute, good transition play led to a header for Haji Wright, which went a little bit wide. 20th minute, good buildup again, but a bad ball from Serginho Dest to Haji Wright, which is unfortunately kind of becoming a little bit of a thing. We need our fullbacks to be playing in more consistent, better balls to our guys in the middle.
Oh, Andrew, we cannot have, not to, to contradict your anthem, but it was two in quick succession from Haji, from Weston McKinney, excuse me, Serginho Dest, that were not top quality and that did not make their target. That can't keep happening, or we are just going to, we're like, for all the good play and the effort back the field and for the patterns of play, and we're so much more coherent as a team than we were in previous iterations before Berhalter. But like, there's got to be some kind of finish, some kind of end game. And we are nowhere near it right now in that sense.
Yeah, those balls just are not, they're just not quite threatening enough. But look, all it takes is one. So I guess you never know. Keep trying. Again, 26th minute, it was that right side for the U.S. constantly doing damage down that right side. Wound up with a ball into Weston McKinney, of course, who fires way over the net. And I think this will be one of probably two moments that American fans will look back on in this game as the big what ifs of this match.
100%. And that was the real chance, because as good as the move, and it was a brilliant move a few minutes later, in the 32nd minute, McKinney's little round the world where he spins past and cuts open the English midfield. And then the ball's recycled through Pulisic, through Musa to Pulisic, who hits the crossbar. As good a chance as that is, I mean, from that angle, it's a low percentage shot. It's great and it nearly snuck in, but the real chance in that first half was McKinney, who arriving late in the box, you expect him to hit the target. And that's the big thing. We did not work Jordan Pickford nearly enough.
No. Now, can I ask you something about the McKinney chance?
Yeah.
Because obviously in real time, like the rest of you, I sort of recoiled in horror as that ball went, 20 feet over the top of the net.
Right.
And I'm watching the replays. I'm going to need your expertise on this.
Sure.
A ball that comes in with that kind of pace, there's a good amount of pace on it, that short hops him, that kind of skips up about a yard in front of him.
Yeah.
I feel like that's more difficult than we maybe understand.
100%. It is much more difficult. But, and also a difficult aspect to it as well, is that it's coming, he's in bodies, he's surrounded by traffic, and that makes it a little bit more difficult. But Andrew, like, we're not talking about some guy who plays for whoever in the USL. We're talking about a center midfielder who's got a name for goals for Juventus. And you kind of expected him to do better. Just at least work Pickford. Keep it down. Keep it on frame. And he didn't. And it was disappointing. It was disappointing. That's at that level, Andrew, that's a great chance.
You're right. I mean, I think at the least what you would like is for that to, like you said, work the goalkeeper, get that on frame, and allow the pace of the pass to do the work for you.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of get your foot on it. You don't need to smash it.
You have to guide it with the inside of your foot. You're right.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of my takeaway from that moment. I sort of looked over at my dad and I was just like, it's England. We're not going to get too many of these chances. Now, we wound up actually, from then on, we kind of kicked on and we're pretty good. But in that moment, my feeling was like, that may be the only chance that we get in this game, because that's sometimes how the U.S. operates against these bigger teams. But then, sure enough, the pressure continued. Like you said, JJ, 29th minute, again, good work from Weston McKinney to keep possession. Got the ball to Yunus Musa, whose shot was deflected right into the arms of Pickford. I mean, that's a dangerous one. That ball could have been, I think it was off John Stones, could have been deflected anywhere. England were fortunate once again. And you started to feel Weston McKinney really coming into this game. 33rd minute, this was the moment. Great from McKinney going forward. That turn that you talked about, gets it to Pulisic, who fires one off the bar. I'm thinking about McKinney's turn on that incident. I'm thinking about Christian Pulisic in the second half going to the corner flag for one of the corner kicks, nodding his head. I'm thinking about a few minutes after the McKinney turn, you had Tim Weah's back heel. The thing that I keep thinking of through this game is that, okay, the goals didn't come, but confidence. Like these guys, like we've watched enough of this U.S. team now to sort of know them like we know the back of our hand. We know when they're feeling themselves. We know when they're down on themselves. This was one of those games where I think the U.S. sort of kind of realized we can play with anyone. Like you could see that they were feeling good out there the way that this game was going. Unfortunately, again, like with Wales, we talked about how it's sad that we could play so well and they could not play so well and it could still be a 1-1 draw. I guess the same kind of applies here. It's a little bit frustrating that the U.S. could be feeling good like that and it still doesn't result in goals. So glass half full, glass half empty, I guess pick from that whatever you choose to.
Yeah, 100%. We just had a comment there from James Stewart who wanted us to talk about, and this is key to the game for me, how our midfield overwhelmed Rice, Bellingham and Henderson when he came on, but it was Rice and Bellingham initially. I thought Musa, McKennie, if you look at, I can't remember the stats, but somewhere midway through the second half, I think Musa had like seven, Musa and Weah had between them 14 recoveries. Seven each, something like that. Forced recoveries, forced turnovers. I got to get my terminology right. But I thought that midfield, we absolutely swamped them. And it started with the front two. We didn't give them easy passing lanes. We cut off the supply to Declan Rice. Declan Rice's stock and trade against Iran was getting on the ball and playing those sometimes square passes or often sometimes those passes that will take out two or three players. And he did that once in the first half against the US and it cut us open, but it was the only time he was allowed to do that. Jude Bellingham was harassed all over the field by our midfield and our energy was so much higher than theirs. I don't know if you noticed, but we seemed to be able to keep going and keep going. We did tire in the second half. I understand that, but we were much, much better than them in midfield and we won that midfield battle. Again, the frustration is that that did not turn itself into a huge amount of chances. If we look at the XG, you know, now one of the deflected shots had a downgraded XG at the end of the game. But if you look, we had England had 55% of the possession, the US 44, England had 8 shots, the US had 10, and the XG for England was 0.54. The XG for the United States was 0.61. You have to create more. You have to work the goalkeeper more. I mean, I'll sound like a broken record, but these are the facts.
I'm thinking about the chances in this game. If we were to compare them, McKinney's that was fired high over the top of the goal, Pulisic off the crossbar versus I'd say Kane's that was deflected by Zimmerman. And I would put Kane's header right at the end of the game. Who, like, to me, I still kind of feel like the quality of chance was probably tipped a little bit in England's favor, although they maybe didn't. They there was certainly not an overwhelming number of them.
I don't know how I feel. I'd have to go back. Like, we're doing this like literally straight after the game. We didn't even get to watch Fox's 30-second highlights over dance music. We didn't get to any of that. So I can't remember everything, but I'm just drawn on the notes I have.
Well, Mason Mount had a shot at the end of the first half that was shot hard, low. Matt Turner was all over. He did a great job. Matt Turner was great tonight, I thought. I can't think of anything.
I think that was the only time Matt Turner went full length in the game.
Yeah, definitively.
So
he's leaving no doubt that we were kind of like, we had always sort of felt like he should be it. And I think he's proving that. And by the way, all of our fears, okay, he's a great shot stopper. We all agreed on that, but what's he going to be like with his feet? Looks good to me.
Looked confident at times, overly confident. Andrew.
Yeah, when he's 22 yards from goal with players all around him, like, okay, dude, pass it, please. Now.
Can I go back in time and just take ourselves out of this game for a second? Is there another player who started at such a low level, being number one on not the sports center top 10, to a World Cup performance shutting out England?
Those are very specific requirements that you've asked me to stay within. I don't know if I can think of another not top 10 number one who's played against England. Like, I don't
but
know.
But you saw what got him number one and not the
top
10.
It was a horrifying moment.
Yeah. And look how far he's come. He's our boy. It's brilliant. And My friend who was a goalkeeper at decent level back home texted me during the game and said he was very impressed by Turner. And, you know, living in America and supporting American soccer, that's the validation I constantly crave.
Mm. You feed off of that.
You've done it.
Second half, I thought the game kind of, it maybe settled in a little bit. England maybe kicked on in a few moments, had us, maybe that might just be my own personal psyche of nerves, that as the clock grew later and later into the game, I just inherently get more and more nervous with every push forward. But all in all, I mean, aside from, you know, we talked about the Walker Zimmerman bad pass in the 92nd minute, just like, yikes, why, gifted them a set piece.
Yeah.
There weren't too many moments though of really, you know, of England really threatening to do damage.
And when, even when Grealish got sprung off the bench, you thought, oh, he's going to run at some tired fullbacks. Didn't really do that much, although we had some good tactical fouls out the field that made sure he wasn't able to do very much. I thought Tyler Adams again, Timothy's just reminded me here. Thanks, great. Timothy Schmidt. How great is Tyler Adams? I thought he was.
Oh, my God, man.
He's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And he's got that. I hate the term swagger. I don't like.
Why?
I just don't like it because his attitude, he's snarling. He is, first of all, he's omnipotent. He gets around so much. Him tracking back on Saka when Anthony Robinson in the second half got caught high up the field. Not his fault. It's going to happen. His tracking back and a slide tackle in the penalty box. That makes you think of former Leeds players. Makes you think of David Batty. Makes you think of like players like Roy Keane. Makes you think about even Luis Enrique when he played center midfield. Like that is, this guy is, he is so good. And you know, if you were watching the midfield tonight, you think of how much they're talking about Declan Rice going for if he's going to leave West Ham, like between 75 and 100 million. You're talking about 120 million for Jude Bellingham. This guy was an absolute steal for Leeds United. And he's in that bracket of centre midfielder. He's by far our best player.
His that slide tackle you talked about when Anthony Robinson was pushing forward, which, by the way, I was okay with. Like, I don't think that was a moment where Anthony Robinson got exposed, you know, being reckless defensively.
No, it's going to happen.
Yeah, like, I think that he was doing the right thing trying to push forward. It just, a turnover occurred, and all of a sudden, like, it's why Anthony Robinson can do that. That's what people need to understand, is, like, our fullbacks can push forward because Tyler Adams does these things. I thought the play that you're referencing there is the sneaky play of the game. I mean, that was a genuinely potentially frightening moment. And he's got it covered. He can go to ground in the box and you still feel comfortable. He's all things, man. He's just a great player. He's exactly what this team has needed for so long.
And Ethan just tweeted, the MLS quota is killing English football. Lovely stuff. Oh, and you know, like from a purely like sports rivalry, tribal kind of place, it's great. Now, right at the end of the game, England were booed off the field by their supporters. One thing I couldn't understand, how have Americans bought more tickets per country? We're second in that table. We're ahead of everyone except the hosts. And yet England outnumbered us tonight in the Al-Bayt Stadium.
It's a pretty simple explanation, JJ.
Go ahead.
How many people that live in the United States that are soccer crazed support the U.S.? How many of them are Mexican fans?
Oh, you've demographed me there, Andrew.
I mean, like, and it's not, I mean, I say Mexico because that's the one that we see the most frequently, but like there are diehard fans that live in the United States of nations all around the world. So that does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would like to give props to the U.S. fans that were there. Like, I'm sure you guys spent a fortune to get there. You decided to go to a World Cup that, from a host nation perspective, was not necessarily the most appealing one, but you created an atmosphere tonight. Like, those fans, maybe England fans were outnumbered you, but those U.S. fans were heard in that stadium. You could tell the players were feeding off of it. Like I said, the way Pulisic was nodding towards the fans as he was going to take the corner kicks. Props, man. Like, I thought the fans have showed up and you were great. You were great there.
Fabian West, this is a two-parter here. We're going to do Fabian and we're going to do, I wonder, is that the Fabian I was talking about who lives in Williamsburg?
Who lives in Williamsburg?
Yeah. Doesn't have a TV. maybe. How do they fix the problem of not converting chances? Simply creating more chances against Iran.
We started this podcast, JJ, with a message from somebody saying not having a great striker is hurting us. Like, I think that that's part of it.
That's part of it too. But if there was a move to, I think our problem is even just before the chance creation. Our chances, if you were to pick the quintessential chance at the US across this game, for the US at this World Cup, across this game and the first game, it would be when Shaq Moore at the end, towards the end of that game, got to the byline and cuts one back and an English defender clears. We're not even getting the big chance. We're just shy of creating the big chance.
Yeah.
And the XG reflects that. It's even more complicated than that. It's not just about having a striker. It's about getting the ball into that striker in the most advantageous position possible. Trevor Joachim, is the lack of warm-up matches, time together before the World Cup, at fault for the lack of chances, or just this bad? I don't think the warm-up has much to do with it, because if you go back to September, across the Saudi Arabia and the Japan game, we had one shot on target. You know, so this has been a problem for a while.
This is who they are. We talked about it all through qualifying.
Yeah.
We don't score many goals. It's just in this team's DNA right now. There's a lot of reasons for it. But if you're suddenly expecting like a three-goal outburst or even two against a team like England, like that's right now, that doesn't feel like who they are. I'm not saying it's impossible, but like that's at this point, I can be disappointed by it, but I can't be surprised by it anymore.
I don't know if David Vernals listens to the pod or he just follows us, but he's from Manchester. He's a Preston North End supporter. This is the English view coming in now. All in all, England will take that. And I would respond, as if you have a choice. Of course. Very complacent. Felt like USA were in a cup final. They were always going to be up for it. Changes were very uninspired from Southgate. Then again, it's a group game. It won't matter too much for England once they're in a knockout game. I would say fundamentally, it does matter though, because it's such a poor performance from the guys that he consistently goes to. And if they're going to be like this against the US, what are they going to be like against better opposition in the knockout stages? Like, they're not very good. And I think they've got very good players. And it comes back to me, the manager is just, he's so conservative.
I mean, yeah, he is. We saw that today. I don't know. I guess I'm having a little bit of a hard time with England because, like, 4 days ago, they scored six.
I know, but like, I
and
think
Iran, who we then thought were crap, beat Wales today 2-0. Who Wales may very well be crap, but Iran clearly aren't as crap as we may have thought they were a few days ago when England scored six against them. So, like, I think some of what he touched on in his point, Southgate is conservative. We do know that. But I think also the point that he makes that this was a cup final for the US, there were a lot of guys on this field today that didn't have chips on their shoulder. We're talking about like boulders, mountains on their shoulder. All Anthony Robinson, who is
English
birth. Pulisic, obviously, who's ground zero of the Chelsea debates between American fans and British Chelsea fans. You've got Aronson and Adams who play in England. Tim Ream, who spent most of his career in England. Like, these guys had something to prove today. So I do think that there is something with the US came out there and just played to a level that maybe England wasn't necessarily expecting.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think the US had a game plan to stop England playing, cut out their center midfielders, win the midfield battle. They did that and they were the better side, albeit yet again not creating a preponderance of chances to make them go on and win the game or to be utterly dominant in the game. Shaolin Shmoog, maybe Wales are just not that good. I know we're bouncing around. Wales aren't that good. Should we go out against Iran? That will be the thing that will rattle round inside in my brain, is that we should have beaten Wales. And I don't give two shiny shites about anyone that says Kiefer Moore changed the game in the second half. They were marginally better in the second half. They won the XG in the second half. But as we said before, there was time and again when we were on the break while they pushed high up the field and we could not execute, like I said, that final pass to cut them over. That will haunt me. if not beating Wales is the reason. Like, Alexi Lalas has been, he's been something on Fox for the opening week of the World Cup, that's for sure. And he's divided opinion. But what he said was true at full time here. We should be sat on 4 points.
Yeah. Yeah. He's right. He is right about that. So there is going to be this kind of feeling of nervousness and frustration until the job is done. I think the next few days building up to this Iran match is going to be, it's going to be very nerve wracking.
And I think we need to factor in again, like Iran in the first game, there's so much going on in Iran right now. It's amazing. Like the you see the atmosphere at the start of the Welsh game for the anthem. This is a team that is completely, I don't know. It was torn apart against England, and then it was brought together against Wales. And there is a wind or a wave carrying Iran right now. And quite apart from that, the fact that they beat Wales so late was unfortunate for Wales, but they were by far and away the better team. And there's a real chance that Iran versus the US, with both teams needing the win to secure, it could be like a basketball game. It could be back and forth. It might be one of those games we look back on in the future and think, wow, that was one of the great US games at a World Cup, one of the great US games of all time, one of the most exciting. Unless Carlos Queiroz reverts to the usual Queiroz ball and tries to stifle Iran. But I look, a lot of people are saying I would bite your hand off to have gone into the last game against Iran needing to win to go through. I understand that point of view, but the way I feel is should have done the business against Wales. There's no two ways about it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that feeling is inescapable right now, although I'm going to try to suppress that feeling until we actually know how this all plays out. If this plays out with the US not advancing, then yeah, we can certainly go back and have that conversation, but I'm not there yet. But I get it. I certainly do get it. A couple other things, JJ. Christian Pulisic, I just saw, was named man of the match for this one. Agree, disagree. I might have leaned Adams. McKinney, I think you can make a shout for Weston McKinney.
I think Pulisic carried a great threat. He had a number of slaloming runs. I thought he was good, but I would have gone Adams. I thought McKinney in flashes, even though he tired in the second half. But on his first half performance alone, I thought Musa was very good too. I know that tackle at the end is going to stick in people's minds, though. That was ridiculous. I personally go with Adams.
I think I would too. But I get it. I wouldn't. It's not one that I would fight anybody over if they said no. It's Pulisic. Yeah, I get that. He was threatening throughout the course of this match. Like I said, I thought even though his set pieces didn't connect, I thought that they were pretty good for the most part. And on a different day, they might have. So I got no issues with that. A couple of the other lightning rod points that we have to get to. I guess first, we haven't really addressed the lineup change. There was only one today, and it was Haji Wright going in place of Josh Sargent up top. I mean, boy, remember all the way back when, JJ, when we all just were sort of resigned to the fact that Jesus Ferreira would be starting up top for the U.S.? Like, yeah. Oh, well, that's right. That was 2 weeks ago. Like, that's just like, what?
But what's Greg supposed to do? Which one of my strikers who don't score shall I play?
I mean, that's sort of how it feels, I suppose. I mean, I had sent my proposed lineup today was to have the 4-2-3-1 maybe. And in that lineup, I was a little bit worried about, like, I was trying to balance the idea of, okay, this is a huge game and I want the US to go for it. But by the same token, I'm also trying to, like, have that jive with the fact that the Iran game is actually going to be the one of greater import to what the US goes on to do. So I'm a little worried about the guys on yellows. So I, in my proposed lineup beforehand, for whatever it's worth, I had sat Weston McKinney, got Brendan Aaronson in there, double pivot with Musa and Adams in a two as a shield to the back four.
Oh, conservative, Andy.
I went conservative, Andy. Those things didn't happen today. And I think, I don't think the U.S. suffered for it. Like I said, Tyler Adams kind of did the job of two men back there over the course of today. But like, if it's about getting goals from that striker position up front, I feel like we're kind of getting to a place where we got to find a different way, whether it's Wright, Sargent, Ferreira, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
G. Tilkins makes the point. JJ, how are the strikers going to score the balls they don't get? That was my whole fucking point earlier. That's the whole shooting match. Like, it's not as if there's balls pinging in round there, right on, and the striker whiffs it, or the striker doesn't make a good connection, or he's not in the right place. The ball isn't getting there.
That's true. Yeah.
That is the point. And it's
but are they in any way responsible for that? Is there anything to the fact that, like, is a run not being made? Are they positionally not in the places that they should be? Should they be coming deeper to try to get themselves into the game? I think Sargent can do that. I don't know if that's necessarily what some of these other, maybe Haji Wright can do that too. I don't know.
Well, let's go through it quickly then. On the corners, there was, like, Maguire was dominating that space. Where was our striker challenging him? There was one that came, remember that one that came right across and Pickford flicked it on his fingers, but there wasn't a US player close. Why isn't there a US player attacking that ball? It's right there. So yeah. So that's part of it too. Let me think of the other chances. Again, yeah, the double desked non-cross early on in the game when we put together lovely moves down the right and the cross hits the first defender. Like, that's nothing got to do with a striker. Now, the one that comes in when McKennie slashes at it, goes over the bar, the one we're talking about, that is certainly, that's down to a technical breakdown or where he just doesn't get his foot, doesn't get his body over the ball.
I mean, remember, too, the first cross that came in this game did connect with Haji Wright. He put it wide.
That to me, that is one of those, what would you call it? It's not even a half chance. He's if you look at the replay, he's well beyond that near post. He done well to get a connection on it at all, but it wasn't close to going in. It was just a nice move that kind of settled us into the game a bit. But I will still keep saying it, where that final pass, that final moment is just not happening for us. I am praying we explode in that sense against Iran. But then I worry about them on the break. I'm just worried. I've turned into you.
So concerned. I think if there's ever a time in life to worry, it's a World Cup. Because, like, the mistakes that get made now reverberate for 4 years. It's as simple as that. So, like, yeah. If you're not worried now, then you don't have a pulse. Like, that's just how it works in tournaments like this. And then, so Haji Wright was obviously the one lightning rod point. The other one, JJ, I don't know. I don't know what to think. My world is upside down. I'm spinning out of control. I need guidance. I need help.
Go on.
Let's talk about Giarena for a sec. So he didn't play the other day. Jordan Morris did. Everything that I had heard indicated that Reyna is in some way, he is hurt more than we understand. Again, today, yeah. And then before this game, it comes out that he's fine. And it was a coach's decision as to why he did not play the other night. Then today, the first wave of substitutions get made. No Reyna. He finally does come on in the 83rd, I believe it was, to give the U.S. 10 minutes at the end. I mean, look, I saw some people saying when the U.S. made the statement that it was a coach's decision as to why he didn't play, kind of saying to me, you doubled down on the fact that he was hurt, but this is what they're saying. Look, I know what's being said. I still believe what I believe, and I don't know what's going to change my mind at this point because I know how good he is. And I mean, look, if we come to find out, if there's some way to definitively prove that he is fully fit and the U.S. chose to go with Jordan Morris over Gio Reyna the other night, and then today against England, they chose to A, not start him, B, not bring him in with the first wave of subs, C, wait until there was only 10 minutes left in this game to bring him on, and you're still going to tell me that he's fully fit. If that can be proven, then I've been wrong all along. I've been wrong all along, and I'll join all of the Triple G haters on this point. I just personally can't get to that place where I believe that because I know how damn good he is. It doesn't make sense to me that he wouldn't be used in a larger role if he was fully fit. There's no alternate universe. There's no reality where he's not playing more if he's fully fit. That's just how I feel. No one can change my mind on this.
But why then does Greg do the coach's flex at the presser the other day and say, oh, it was a coach's decision after explicitly mentioning muscular tightness after the Wales game? Why not just say straight off after the Wales game, hey, didn't want to play him. I didn't think the game state was right for him. That's it. Don't contradict yourself. What is the line here? He's injured or he's not.
I don't know. And I don't know who it serves. Like, I don't know if it serves a certain person for us to believe that he's healthy or not healthy. Like, my mind, unfortunately, is too feeble to understand like how all of that would work and like what motives there would be to suggesting one thing or another. I don't know. All I know is what my eyes tell me about that guy's skill level. And if he's not playing, like I said the other night, what are you saving these guys for? We're here now. This is it. So like, that's the only thing that I can lean back on, and the little bits of information that get out. I do believe that there's a fitness issue attached to this. Like I said, I don't know. The U.S. may continuously say there's not, but they let us know a little bit, at least the other day, that there is something. It's just where I'm at with this.
I think with the game stretch, just as you expected Jack Grealish to do something when he came in being the creative player, I think Reina should have come on sooner. I think he would have given the English something different to think about. And also a guy in those moments where games are stretched who can keep the ball. It's invaluable. I tend to side with you, Andrew. I am giving this episode should be sponsored by the American Egg Association, because we are stepping on Greg shells. I tend to think that I'm giving benefit of the doubt to Greg. He's got to have some medical concern not to play him. There's no explanation otherwise, because he should absolutely be more involved. That's where I go with that.
Yeah.
A lot of people are just saying on the man of the match issue, how good Harry Maguire was. Is it time to give him his flowers?
He's having a good tournament. He might have saved. I mean, again, there are certain moments in a game that you may not ever fully understand how dangerous they were because they weren't allowed to materialize. Like we talked about when Tyler Adams got back to cover for Anthony Robinson. I think the same could be said for Maguire's header as on the corner kick when Walker Zimmerman was poaching the back post. It was a great ball played in that Maguire was able to clear. I think for all of the shtick that he gets, like with Zimmerman, if we're going to point out the bad, we got to point out the good. I think English fans probably have to do the same with Maguire. I don't think you can see too many areas of criticism right now.
No.
So I'll give him props for that. JJ, while you're looking for more comments, can I play a quick game with you right now?
Oh, you know I love the game.
Because I think anyone can relate. I don't know if anybody joined late and I'm wondering, where the hell is Andrew right now? What is going on in that room? I'm in my parents' basement. And I think we can all relate to what a parent's basement is. Like, I want to play a game, JJ, called What Exactly Is In This Basement?
Boom. Okay.
Because we all have parents who have basements that have just random S.
Do you want me to do it, or do you want the animals to do it in the comments?
Well, I mean, I would say this is one of the ultimate things that one might find in a parent's basement, JJ. What parent basement doesn't have a bushel of fake flowers? This is
None.
A staple of all homes from a certain era.
And this is your mom when your dad says, oh, throw them out. And then oh, my God. Ugh.
Here's an old copy of When Harry Met Sally on DVD.
Absolutely. Okay, don't throw that out. Keep it.
Let's see. What else can be found in my parents' basement? My original PS1. This is all just within arm's length of me. Like,
oh,
imagine what other treasures can be found down here.
That's good stuff. The PS1's
works. Like I told you, there's an industrial sized dehumidifier in the corner. Like, this thing is probably filled with water.
Is there a mini fridge?
Oh, I thought there was. I don't see a mini fridge. I mean, obviously, there's lots of like baby related things that will just collect dust there for generations to come, I'm sure.
Exercise bike used as a clothes hanger?
No. If it were mine, it would. This is my dad's. Trust me, that thing gets used.
Oh,
he could spin circles around me.
Encyclopedia Britannica.
I don't see one of those here. Speaking of my dad, you know what so with this World Cup has brought a little bit of interest from my family in this tournament. So for the first time in their lives, they're listening to this podcast that I've spent the last 8.5 years hosting. And so, you know what, my dad, I debated telling you this because I'm afraid of what's about to happen here.
Oh no.
But you know what he said to me, when I got home, I got back here late Wednesday night and we were talking for a little bit. And he said, you know, I got to say that that JJ has just an amazing command of the English language.
Oh, Johnny boy.
I say, that's true. He's very well read. He's very proud of his vocabulary.
I'm not even.
But you know what's funny? My dad caught himself But he almost, as he started his sentence, he had to stop himself because he almost came out with it by saying, for someone who English isn't their first language. And then he remembered that, oh yeah, just because your accent is Irish, it is English that you're
Did he say that?
I said, were you going to say English isn't his first language?
Oh, that's classic America brain. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This language begins and ends with an American accent.
Anything else from this game, Andrew? Because we should probably mention some other football matches that have been... Casey Adkins. Oh, no, I can see JJ's head getting bigger. Honestly, I won't be able to get out the door. And now I've got the moniker Old Verbose JJ.
I mean, you've probably been... We're only just realizing now you've probably been forcing Darcy to refer to you that around your apartment for the last several years.
Oh, Royalty 95 is Old Learned JJ. Old Erudite JJ. Yeah, pretty good.
Oh, my God.
Pretty good. I like all these. A couple of quick ones. Shaq Moore over Yedlin and Scally. That was a choice. Didn't see that coming.
Me neither. I was really surprised when he popped up.
I don't think he did well either.
No, I mean, don't either. He tried to make a pass down the near side of the field that did not connect, then committed a foul to compound it. I mean, look, he wasn't on that long, but no, I would say his impact was not necessarily positive. Seemed like he had a couple opportunities maybe to play in across, chose not to, and then those possessions kind of petered out. I don't know. I mean, the scallywags, they'll look at this and say, come on, man. Like, you brought them. Now you got to use them.
Jesus.
I kind of felt that way, too. Look, Shaq Moore won me over after his Gold Cup performance. I thought he was really strong, but I was a little surprised to see him included on the team. I will say this. Scally is one thing. I was okay with him playing today over Yedlin. I did not think Yedlin was great the other day when he came
Yedlin
on. In general, I don't think Yedlin has really been great for this team. Scally's the one that I think could be a potential wild card that I wouldn't mind seeing get a chance in there.
But I'd love to talk to Greg and say, you know, hey, Greg, how you doing? That's how it opened. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between, like, why is Yedlin and Shaq Moore a better option to bring in than Scally? Like, what fundamentally, break that one down for me. How is that the hierarchy?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm sure he has an answer for that. I don't know that I do. I wouldn't mind seeing that. JJ, I'm just kind of scrolling through Twitter here. Obviously, you know, we're referencing Berhalter right now, so it seems like a good time to bring up this tweet that I see from at Eric Krakauer, who says, what are Berhalter's detractors going to criticize him about after this? I don't know if he means that in a very pro Berhalter way.
Well, it sounds pro GB,
sounds
right?
Pro, yeah, but I'm taking that as more. I guess I'm taking more of an unbiased, objective approach. Where, and I'll genuinely ask the question, not trying to vouch for one side or the other. Coming out of this game, what would the Berhalter detractors' number one criticisms be of Triple G?
I think the substitutions, the changes. And if they were being particularly picky, they'd say the starting of Haji Wright out the blue.
Instead of who?
Yeah, well, exactly. But they would say that it's incoherent, that all of a sudden he's starting. Why not Ferreira if you've thought to bring him, if you've thought to use him more often?
Let me tell you something about the Triple G detractors. They're not calling for Jesus Ferreira. I think we at least know that.
The hyper-focus from the Triple G detractors will be on Gio Reyna. We know that. And I think the other point of contact will probably be the substitutions and Shaq Moore. That's what I would say. Because, like, you can't say from a tactical standpoint we didn't do well. We stopped England, and the part of their midfield that flourished against Iran was shut down. And that is a big... Don't let anyone tell you that's not a good thing that the US have done tactically today. And we had brilliant performances from that triumvirate in midfield. We look good in the 4-4-2. We look good in attack, except for the crucial points of an attack, the final pass and finishing. I don't think it'll be a rough night for Triple G in terms of the heat he's going to take.
I think you underestimate the detractors.
Yeah, no, they're there. I know they're there. And like, God knows we've been some of them. Like, we flitted in and out with this guy.
I think sometimes I definitely am painted with he's pro triple G brush, because I don't indiscriminately rip every move. I at least the way I see it. Like, I don't know. I don't think every single thing he does is wrong.
Right.
And in this Gio Reyna situation, I'm choosing to kind of trust I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt when the detractors will not. If that's pro triple G, then fair enough. I guess I'll have to wear that.
Shall we look, before we get out, shall we look at a few other games of note of the past few days since last we pod?
Well, real quick, before we entirely get out of this game, I just want to look a little bit at the England perspective.
Oh, yeah, good point.
A couple things on England. First off, it's hard to do this because we're so kind of entrenched within USMNT culture.
It's not hard for me.
But I'm saying if you remove yourself from knowing everything we know about this US side and what our expectations are and what we think of this team, if you were an English fan who doesn't really know, who came into this game not really knowing anything about them, what would your impression be of this team?
It looked to me like a team, a slow, stodgy team, a team with some players that maybe at the end of the line, maybe towards the end of their England careers.
No. I mean, what would your impression be of the US?
If
you were an English fan that came into this game not really knowing much about them, I recognize a couple names here and there, and then you saw them play today, would you come out of this game thinking, they're actually pretty good? Or would you be more of the, we're crap, that team's not that good, and we let them off the hook? I'm just wondering which way England fans are going right now.
Well, England fans will go that way. They'd be loath to give the US very much credit, and that's why they didn't at the end. The booing at the end was almost an attempt to seize the narrative. If you boo en masse at the end against your team, then it's very clear that your upset is with their performance and not giving much credit to the opposition. So, I mean, that would be absolutely their take. But I think it's probably, the truth is somewhere in the middle. I definitely thought that I thought that England were poor, Andrew. Like, to create so little against the US, to get at them so little. Like, how many times did they create moves that cut the United States open? Not enough for a team of that quality. Sterling looks, Mount was, I suppose he forced that save from Turner, but Mount looked poor. Sterling looked poor. Sterling certainly doesn't look like a guy.
JJ, when he came off, I mean, I looked at my dad and said, he did nothing. Like, did we even hear his name mentioned?
No, hardly at all. Hardly at all. I also thought, if it's working to get the ball to Saka, get the ball to Saka. And they weren't able to do that. Now, part of that was shutting down the passing lanes and making sure Rice and Bellingham couldn't function, which was very good from the US. But even still, some of the best passes, the two best passes played by any English player in the first half were played by Maguire, who had two big switches of play to Shaw on the left-hand side. Incoherent, not very good.
Yeah,
Newman makes a good point. I know I'm going back to the US again. Dest was pissed to get taken off. Dest was absolutely livid.
I'd be curious to hear from Berhalter as to what that was all about. I think I had no problem with him coming off in that spot. He's on a yellow. There was, 10 minutes to go or so when that substitution was made. I was generally fine with it. I also don't mind a player who's fighting to stay on. I'm generally okay with that too. To me, it's a non-issue, but I'd be curious to hear if there was anything to that maybe is more than meets the eye. I don't know. One thing on England, I will say this, kind of a first for me today in getting to experience Harry Kane from the other side, and sort of feeling, I guess, what opposing, like, I've supported him his entire career as a Tottenham player. I will say he didn't do very much today.
No.
But like in watching him, when he's on the ball, I'm instantly nervous. Not usually how I feel watching him play. You can see his ability to pick a pass. The US obviously keyed in on him. It felt like they had a body on him pretty much throughout. And they tried to limit anything that he was going to be able to provide. But having said that, the two biggest opportunities of the game came from his foot and his head. So even in a game where the US are doing all they possibly can to stifle him, he's going to find his chances. And you just have to hope that either the ball goes wide like it did on the header, or someone throws themselves in front of it like Walker Zimmerman did on his chance in the first 10 minutes of this game. So he is very much that. Like, now I see a little bit like what an opposing fan will feel when they're facing him. You're nervous. You're nervous all the time when he's near the ball.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, if we're going to have a discussion about other games at the World Cup now, Andrew, mm-hmm. would you like to wax lyrical about Richarlison? The floor is yours.
I mean, like, shut it down. Goal of the tournament. It's sewn up. It's decided. It's one of the great World Cup goals, not at Qatar 2022. It's one of the great World Cup goals that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So
terrible first touch made it what it was, though.
I guess. I didn't think the first touch was that bad. He played.
No, the ball is flying. I'm being slightly facetious. The ball is flying at him and it pops up, but the popping up allows him to do
what to create a worldie.
Oh, what a goal.
It was incredible. It's just like what you, I mean, I don't know. It's cliche to say it, but whatever, you're a kid and you just, you dream of that, of doing something like that on a stage like that. Unbelievable. Goal of the tournament. If something tops it, I hope something does, because that means that we're going to be treated to just like another of the greatest goals we've ever seen in our lifetimes. Cause that was sensational. Unfortunately, the big takeaway from that,
yeah.
I mean, I guess Richarlison's goal is one of the big takeaways, but it's more so Neymar leaving again with an injury. He was fouled constantly. I think I saw a statistic, JJ, 10 times he was fouled by, was it Colombia back in 2014, were the most that a player's been fouled in a World Cup match. Second on that list were the 9 times that he was fouled in this World Cup match. And unfortunately, he's got an ankle injury that apparently does have some level of ligament damage. He's out for the remainder of the group stage.
So is Danilo.
That's all they're saying for now. I would think, though, that his absence could be extended beyond that. At the very least, he might be reduced to a substitute role. Boy, it sucks. We talked, I mean, he's a generational talent. And here we are yet again in another moment where we're forced to confront Neymar not being available for big games through injury. It's kind of becoming one of the unfortunate storylines of one of the great soccer careers.
And it's going to be interesting to see how Brazil react to that, because it kind of brings me in mind of the conversation I had with Tim Vickery last week about Brazil going into this and how he thinks it was a mistake not to bring Roberto Firmino, and what that's going to mean now. So, like, what changes do they make to the attack? How is this attack recalibrated? Who's going to play centrally there in that position? I don't know. It's going to be very, very, very interesting to see what Chiche does. But Serbia went from the very beginning. Andrew Pavlic comes out and like kicks him twice. Pavlic got a yellow card after like 5 minutes. Richarlison's goal was great and everything, but the talk is all about how they'll cope without Neymar. The other games from yesterday, there was obviously Uruguay 0, South Korea 0, which.
That was a game that happened.
And even, I mean, Switzerland.
Fede Valverde rocked the post with like a 25-yard laser late in that one, but
that was
game
it
that happened.
Yeah, and Switzerland-Cameroon wasn't great either. The Swiss got a late goal from Brelin Bolo, which was your first, I think, ever international or first World Cup non-celebration.
Yeah, scoring a goal in a World Cup against the country of your birth, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, you don't celebrate. And so it looks so weird because it's something from the club culture we see all the time. It's weird to see it in a World Cup. And then, of course, there was a game which was absolutely rancid up until the hour, or just after the hour mark, when Cristiano Ronaldo was given a penalty that was, for the life of me, not a penalty. But I guess he's a bit like Ryan Giggs when he won the PFA Player of the Year award. He's getting it for lifetime achievement penalty.
I didn't think it was a penalty either.
No.
It was really soft. I saw some stuff on Twitter from various, you know, referee analysts saying that you can call it soft, but it is technically a penalty.
I don't think so.
Then put, if that's the case, put me into the category of someone that says that is very soft.
Yeah, very, very soft. But then it kind of unleashed this brilliant game, this absolutely incredible game. That broke out for about a half an hour. So they went 1-0 up, and then Andre Ayew equalized on 73 minutes. And then João Felix on 78 put Portugal back ahead. And then Rafael Leão on 80 minutes. That's 3-1. But no, it's not over. Bukari headed home. Great goal, 89. And then Iñaki Williams, right at the end, almost had what would have gone down as one of the great World Cup moments. But
he got too excited.
Denied him. He slipped.
He got too excited.
Oh, but Andrew, he was going to score. There's no question.
So.
Oh, and it was so good. Now, I've seen that. Oh, I think Robbie Keane's done that twice in his career. Once for Tottenham against Birmingham, where he pretended to tie his shoelaces. The goalkeeper forgot about him. He rolls it out and Keane nips in around him and scores. But if Williams had done that against Portugal, and there's this great shot of Ronaldo on the sideline putting his hands in his head as it happens, that would have been just perfect. And honestly, I think maybe Ghana would have deserved something out of that game, but they got nothing.
You are right, though, that we were robbed of one of the most thrilling moments in World Cup history. Can you just, like, what if he did it?
Yeah.
What if he actually did it? I don't know how big into basketball you are, JJ, but I saw a lot of people tweeting that he almost Jose Alvarado'd him. It's this basketball player who's like, put his name in Twitter right now and you'll find compilation videos of him kind of like hiding in the backcourt and then sneaking up from behind and stealing balls away. Like, that's become his signature move. So he almost did it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And in that moment,
another talking point, has there been a worse home nation team than Qatar? I mean, at least South Africa got a draw and a win against France. They missed out on round of 16 by goal difference. Yeah, Qatar have been wretched.
They scored a goal today, and I actually thought they weren't as bad. They were not nearly as bad as they were in the opener. I mean, look, they'll shoot to the top of the list of worst performance by host nation that we've ever seen. But I actually thought today was not as embarrassing. The second half in particular was not. It was not an embarrassment. At least that's not the way I saw it.
Okay, we're going to go back to Wednesday just for a sec here, because Morocco did a number on Croatia, 0-0. Tricky start for Luka Modric's men. And then Japan 2, Germany 1. What a performance by the Japanese, particularly in the second half. That is, in terms of the shocks of the tournament so far, it's up there. I think the Japanese are considered a better team than Saudi Arabia were prior to their...
This is second place to the Saudi Arabian upset.
Absolutely. And straight away, Hansi Flick and the German side are on the back. They're on the back foot again at a tournament, again struggling against an Asian side. And I mean, for a while they were dominant. I thought Germany were going to win this, but Takuma Anso Asano's goal was just... It was such a great finish. I know it was close in, and a lot of people are saying Neuer should have done better, but he's just absolutely roofed it, and a really brilliant goal. Rudiger and Sula. I said on the podcast prior to the World Cup that I kind of worried about Sula in the Sula-Rudiger partnership. I worry about both of them. They were poor, very, very poor, and Japan exposed them. And then later in that day, we saw a representative of CONCACAF, and I know we have to, for some reason, we have to be sad about all CONCACAF teams that lose. But Spain opened up in Costa Rica 7-0, a total shellacking. Less said about that one, the better. It was the gulf in class was so big. It was frightening, actually. Costa Rica didn't manage a shot, nor a shot on target. No shots, nothing.
Can anything be taken away from that from the Spanish perspective?
No, nothing. Oh, okay. No. It was Spain looked very, very good. That's a great result. Well done. That move on. There's nothing to be more to be
seven
taken.
Goals.
Yeah, I know. But Andrew, Costa Rica were, it just looked like a team from another planet had come to play Spain. You know, they didn't look like they were footballers at all, which is, it's such a shame because we know they have a proud soccer tradition in Costa Rica. I felt bad for them. And then, well, we talk about deserve on the last podcast in relation to Argentina and Saudi Arabia, and there is no deserve in soccer, and that's particularly true. Canada falling to Belgium 1-0 in a game that...
Canada were brilliant.
They were very, very good. They were very, very good. I do think there was a decision made in the game that is baffling and that will be regretted hugely. Why was Alfonso Davies taking that penalty?
yeah, that's a fair question.
I just don't understand it, Andrew. He's not the regular penalty taker. He doesn't take penalties regularly for anyone. I don't know.
It's unfortunate because they certainly again, there is no deserve. They played well enough to at least have gotten a point. Really should have won that game. Yeah, I don't know if there are people around the world, like we talked about when we previewed Canada coming in, that thought, oh, that's adorable that Canada's back in a World Cup. Oh, that's nice. I mean, there were going to be a lot of people out there who were in for a rude awakening, and you could see Canada were crushed when this was over. I thought it was great of John Herdman to gather them at midfield and kind of rally them
the troops
afterwards, because they needed that, and they sort of, you know, maybe they did need to be told in that moment. I'm sure their only focus was that they had just lost. But I think that game, if nothing else, the game sent a huge message that this is not just like, this is not some pushover in this tournament that like the powerhouses are going to be able to have fun with. They're really good. All of us here in this part of the world know this, but you know, there's going to be some rude awakenings. Unfortunately, Belgium got that rude awakening, but Canada just, they weren't incisive enough to make them pay for it.
And the other game of note was from today that we should mention. We're going to do podcasts next week, so we'll be wrapping up a lot of things and covering a lot of other countries outside of the US. But we should note the Netherlands 1-1 draw with Ecuador. The Netherlands, they haven't looked good so far. The win against Senegal, okay, was fine. It wasn't a super performance. Today, I know Cody Gakpo, that was a brilliant strike to open the scoring on 6 minutes, but I mean, Ecuador could have taken, they could have taken all 3 points in this game. The Dutch only had two shots, one shot on target in the entire match.
Yeah.
They don't look, they're just not flowing. And they don't look what we may have hoped they'd look. Ecuador, full credit to them again, Andrew. They look very, very good. And they'll take a point. It's probably a good result. But I don't know. Estupiñán again, Ener Valencia, they're a good side, and they really gave Holland the full of it, and I think Ecuador are going to go through.
It's going to come down to the final day, right?
Yeah,
as things stand right now,
there's Netherlands and Ecuador are first and second respectively on 4 points, and then Senegal are on third with three. Senegal and Ecuador, yeah, it's going to come down to that game. But that group's been, it's been more interesting than I thought than we thought it would have. Netherlands certainly not running away with it.
No, not yet. It's going to come down to it's going to come right down to the end. Should be, I mean, that final day is going to be thrilling. That's about all I got for this one, JJ. This game that we've waited all these months for, it happened. It's over now.
Before we leave, Newman, our dear, dear friend, asked, JJ, do you celebrate Thanksgiving? What were we all drinking yesterday? And most importantly, favorite dish? Newman, I do celebrate. I have long-standing ties to this country, beginning with my grandfather. So I knew about Thanksgiving. We didn't really celebrate it in Ireland, but when I come here, I get fully involved. Stuffing is my favorite. I love stuffing. And I had a lovely glass of red wine, a few glasses of red wine yesterday. It was gorgeous. Andrew, what did you do? How did you fart away this Thanksgiving?
Oh, did I? all the stuffing, all the mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, all of it. It was glorious. World Cup during the day, right into Giants, Cowboys. It was a good day of sports all the way around. The football game, American football games were all really good. In terms of what I was drinking, had a very nice, several, a few glasses of this. It's a apple whiskey, ginger beer, apple cider combo, and Ooh. It goes down very easy. And we went hard. It was nice. It was very nice.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, it was a great Thanksgiving. No complaints. Enjoyed and really enjoyed it.
This has been a great stream, guys. Fantastic. Everyone join us during your holidays. Again, another bumper turnout from the animals and from our listeners. I can't appreciate you guys enough. And I guess for those of you who aren't with us now, you can hear us when we drop it on the pod.
That's right. This will be an audio vehicle as well. We will be back. I'll have to check the calendar. I'm not exactly sure when the next one will be. Obviously, The U.S.'s next match Tuesday. That is the great decider. Today was the hype game. Like, today is the one that, like, we've been hearing all about, thinking all about. But in terms of, like, true importance, Tuesday, baby. It's another one of these cycles, World Cups, where the U.S., it's all going to come down to that final group stage game. We thought today was nerve-wracking, but, like, there wasn't real jeopardy associated with today's game. Let's start wrapping our minds around Tuesday and how about the jeopardy surrounding
this
that
is what we want.
If the U.S. loses to Iran,
all those years with your real dad Dave Sarakan watching us play meaningless friendlies, now it counts.
Well, we talked a lot about him around my Thanksgiving table.
Oh boy, yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah, a lot of uncomfortable conversations having to be had. Mommy, where does my love of soccer come from? Well, let me tell you something, son.
Finish your potatoes. No more soccer talk.
Hey, this was fun, man. We'll be back again. Keep posted. Follow us at CO Soccer Pod, at JJ Devaney, at A Gunling. We'll have updates for when the next pod will be. But certainly, if at the very least, we'll do another one on Tuesday after USA Iran. And then at that point, we'll know where our future lies. JJ, good stuff, my friend, to you. I say,
check you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care, man. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.